time now for the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. And now, here she is, the smart, the sexy, the savvy, Divine Miss Z.
Welcome to today's show. Now, today, this show is actually going to be part of an ongoing series called Informed Discussions, Muslims and Islam. Now, it seems the world has gone crazy, but should we be going crazy or not? When it comes to the topics of Islam, ISIS, Muslims, Sharia law, refugees, the Quran, and hijabs, the world seems split in half. Some people think all Muslims are evil terrorists, and others say no, that we should allow thousands of Muslims into the United States. But meanwhile, violence has escalated worldwide. Now, I've spent over 400 hours reading up on this topic, trying to come up with the truth. And I still have a lot of questions. And I don't know that necessarily any one guest can have all of the answers, because not everybody thinks the same way. Okay, today in the studio with me, I have Hassan Shibley. He's the director of the Council on American Islamic Relations of the Tampa chapter, and my friend Hagar, who is a Christian. Now, I'm Jewish. We have questions, and today, hopefully, we're going to get some answers to try and clarify what mainstream media portrays. I don't watch a lot of TV or the news because I feel a lot of that is twisted. We want to get the real answers. So I'm going to ask my guests to provide direct questions to answers and not to deflect or change the topic. So I'm going to start with you, Hassan. Thank you for coming today. Can you give a little bit about your background, who you are, and what CARE is all about?
Sure. I was born in Damascus, Syria, and I came over to the U.S. with my parents. My father is an oral surgeon. My mother is a professor of orthodontics at the University of New York at Buffalo. We came when I was 4 years old, really seeking the tremendous freedom and opportunity to be who we want to be, to practice our faith, to pursue our dreams that, frankly, we didn't have in Syria. I think a lot of people are shocked to learn that I have more freedom to practice my faith, Islam, in America than I do in most other so-called Muslim-majority countries like Syria. So I came here, grew up in public school all my life, went to the University of New York Law School, and now I'm the executive director of CARE Florida, the Council on American Islamic Relations in Tampa, which has grown to be really one of the largest and most effective civil rights organizations in the state of Florida. We have a diverse team, different people of different religions, Christians, Jews, atheists, working together to defend the civil rights of all Americans in the state of Florida. So anybody who faces discrimination, harassment, or abuse, anybody whose civil rights or constitutional rights are protected, will actually provide them with free legal assistance. And we're really just working together for a society where children of people of all races, cultures, colors, religions can grow up proud of who they are without fear of intimidation or harassment.
Okay, now how would you summarize Islam to someone who doesn't know anything about the religion?
Excellent question. So Islam, it really means peace through surrender to God, and it's really about four key things. The first is about humility before God and God's creation, that we recognize the greatness of God, the almightiness of God, and really our own weakness and our need for Him. When we're humble, then we can be grateful. We can be grateful for all of God's blessings and gifts upon us, upon creation, upon humanity. When we're grateful to God, then we can fall in love with God by recognizing how much He does for us each and every moment in our life, each and every second, each and every breath. When we fall in love with God, then we're willing to sacrifice to serve the creation of God. So we can summarize Islam by saying Islam is about recognizing two areas of rights. God's rights are that we recognize His oneness, that He is one, almighty, all-powerful, all-loving, all-merciful, that there is none like Him, and that we then honor His creation. We recognize the rights of His creation, that we show them mercy, love, compassion, and service, and that we prefer others to ourselves. Islam is about recognizing that there is one God and honoring all of His prophets and messengers who came with that same divine message from Adam, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. Recognize the oneness of God and serve His creation.
Okay, now Hagar, do you have a comment to that?
I do, because I see Muhammad and Isa as theologically different, as theological as they come. I don't understand how those two can be put in the same basket. You know, we see Christ's life, who has dedicated His life, never shed blood. As a matter of fact, brought people back to life, cured disease, cured blindness, which was, you know, the euphemism for spiritual blindness. And He tried very hard. Well, He just came and He was who He was. And there's a certain, you're drawn to that. anybody who wasn't drawn to Muhammad, well, he'd just lob off their head.
No, that, I mean, that's absolutely false historically, and that's why the Islamic civilization was rated by historians from Michael Hart to Karen Armstrong and many others as the most tolerant, most just of civilizations. In fact, the only time Jews and Christians and Muslims have coexisted peacefully in the Middle East was under Islamic rule, which honored Christians and honored Jews. When the Christians took over, unfortunately, in Jerusalem with the Crusades, you had over 100,000 civilians killed by the Crusaders, and Jews and Muslims together. Now, this wasn't a problem of Christianity. It was a problem of politics and power. It wasn't really Christians versus Muslims in my eyes. And those invading Christians were not reflective of Jesus Christ. Rather, they were reflective of the European powers who wanted to gain more territory. And that's what conflict is ultimately about. It's not about religious differences. It's not about who controls the kingdom of heaven, because that's for God to decide. It's about who's controlling the kingdom on earth. Now, under Abba Iban, one of the former leaders of Israel, said Jews were treated justly twice in history, in America and under Islamic rule. Muslims coexisted peacefully with Christian Jews, and that's honoring the message of Prophet Muhammad, who believed that Jesus Christ was a messenger of God, who believed that Moses was a messenger of God. And as a Muslim, I cannot enter paradise unless I love and honor Moses and I love and honor Jesus Christ.
Okay, so now, you're fast, you talk fast. Northerner, same thing,
yep,
here.
From New York.
Okay, so New York, New Jersey here. So you're going to bring me up to a question I was going to ask later. All right, so you know I've spent a lot of time reading on this topic, trying to come to the truth. But I believe it was in the Quran where it talks about killing the infidels, killing the Christians, and killing the Jews. Now, I want to talk about how that applies now to, say, a moderate Muslim, but I want to back up just a little bit and kind of go backwards here. ISIS. ISIS is such an extremist organization that to me it seems, I'll tell you what it seems like to me, it seems like a bunch of sociopathic people who are cultish, who are killers, and who take those words and twist it to such an extreme that it no longer is part of Islam. It's something else entirely, way off the charts. Yet you have people in foreign countries controlling them. ISIS is controlling foreign countries, and that's one of the reasons we have so many refugees. People are afraid to stay there. So are we all in agreement on what that ISIS is not part of Islam, or how would you – go ahead, Hayward.
Okay, here's what I see as far as the Quran is concerned, because as you've so aptly pointed out, how someone lives out their faith may or may not please God. And so that's, like you said, that's in the heavenly realm. However, the Quran is the holy book, is it not?
It is.
Yeah. So then the Quran here gives several instances of where slavery is perfectly okay.
Well,
as a matter of fact, now let me finish.
Let
me finish. Allow
next.
Me finish. Allow
no,
me
I
to
will,
finish,
but we're
please.
Jumping topics. We're talking about slavery and killing Jews and Christians and not talking about slavery.
I'm not, because ISIS does this. ISIS does this. So how are you going to extol ISIS?
Stick to one topic.
Wait a minute. No.
Yes.
Please let me finish.
Right. Sure.
I know I'm a woman, but please let me finish. Okay. Here we have several Quran, and I could read them, about slavery, sex slaves. And so how can you say to these people, these ISIS, this is wrong, when they can turn around and they can quote all of these? As a matter of fact, there's more given in the Quran to slavery than there is praying five times a day. So, you know, here you have this in the Quran, which is the pure version of Islam, and then there's the interpretations which ISIS has interpreted.
So
Islam.
I want to jump in here, and I don't know if I'm going to answer this correctly. This is based on what I'm reading. I think Islam in the United States might be different than in the Middle East, and I'm not sure of that, but there is human trafficking. There is sex slavery here. And there's no excuse for that whatsoever. But I think
it's not sanctioned, though.
No.
It's not sanctioned in the Bible.
Well, yes.
Or maybe it's other works,
okay.
But in the Quran, definitely is.
But in the Middle Eastern countries, it seems to be much more tolerated, I guess would be a better choice, or promoted that it's acceptable. So that we don't think of it as acceptable.
They can read it in writing.
So to jump in and actually basically what I'm asking is, for one thing, I want to answer all your questions. There's a lot of misunderstanding,
sure.
A lot of misinformation.
Okay.
Just to make things easier, I would ask that we stick to one topic at the next, because just jumped into three, four different topics, which I'm happy to answer each and every single one. So let's talk about, you said the Quran talks about killing Muslims, killing Jews and Christians. No, it absolutely does not. It absolutely does not talk about killing Christians or Jews. And in fact, it is never allowed in Islam to kill people simply because of their religious differences. So to understand the verses about fighting in the Quran, We have to go back to the history and the context.
Okay.
You know, I've memorized half the Quran by heart. I love the Quran. I stand by the Quran, right? It's a beautiful book. It's amazing. It's changed the lives of countless of people, and it's made the world much better. Now, let's talk about the verses in the Quran as it relates to fighting. So basically, to understand them, we have to go back in history. You have Abraham. He went and he established the city of Mecca with his wife Hajar and their child Ishmael. All right. One of the great descendants of Ishmael and Abraham was the Prophet Muhammad. The Prophet Muhammad was a great descendant of Abraham. Now, Abraham built the city of Mecca that was built on worshiping one God. Over the years, the idol worshippers basically started putting many idols, and they started worshiping idols instead of worshiping one God. And Prophet Muhammad rejected this, and he started preaching this brand new message that, hey, we shouldn't be worshiping gods of wood and stone. We need to worship the God of Abraham. Now, when he did this, he also challenged a lot of their practices. For example, the practice of burying baby girls alive. That was a practice of the polytheist Arabs. That was one of the first things he stopped. He talked about freeing slaves, empowering the weak, empowering a woman. And this was disrupting the social order. So Prophet Muhammad and his followers were persecuted for over a dozen years until, frankly, they had to flee Arabia and go to Abyssinia and seek the protection of the Negus, the Christian king. And the polytheists chased them, and they said, we will give you mountains of gold if you release these rebels back to us. The Christian king, the Negus, had a trial for the Muslims, and when he heard what the Muslims had to say, he drew a line in the sand. He said, the difference between me and you is no thicker than this line. You're welcome to live in my land in peace for as long as you want. And actually built a beautiful friendship and relationship based on that. Now, the Meccans continued to persecute and prosecute the Muslims until finally verses about self-defense were revealed in the Quran. It said permission has been given for those who were wrong to fight and defend themselves because God does not love transgression. And the rules were very strict that, yes, you can fight to defend yourself, but you can't transgress because God does not love transgressors. So those verses were about self-defense. The Quran continues, why is God allowing people to fight? Well, the Quran says what's translated as, if God did not check one people by means of another, then churches, mosques, and synagogues where God's name is being remembered would be destroyed by those who don't believe in God. So believers are allowed to fight to defend themselves. They're allowed to fight to stop aggression and injustice and oppression. But they themselves are never allowed to transgress or oppress. Now, what happens is you have these crazy groups like ISIS twist these verses out of context so that they can control more land, so they can make millions of dollars in oil sales every single day. It's about controlling power. And look, Islam has been hijacked by an extremist group to suit its political ends, just as Christianity and Judaism has been before. I mean, let's not forget right now today in Africa, the Lord's Resistance Army is a self-proclaimed Christian army that's killed thousands of civilians. Not too long ago in this country, you had the witch hunts, and you had in Europe, you had the Inquisition. Look, here's the point. My problem is this. It's that when we have double standards, so when you have somebody who's Christian and they look at Islam and say, oh, look, there's this and this verse which we can take out of context, and there's this and this bad thing done by Muslims, so that means Islam and Muslims are bad. But I'm going to ignore all the bad things that were done in the name of Christianity and the many violent verses in the Bible. I mean, there's over 35 crimes which are punishable by death in the Bible, including stoning and burning and crucifixion. So let's not have double standards. Let's not take things out of context. If we don't have double standards, we don't take things out of context, we won't fear each other, we won't hate each other.
Okay, I got to jump in here. I got a question for you. Okay, so I'm Jewish. In Judaism, there are different sects of Judaism. You know, you have the secular, the non-religious, and
sure.
You have conservative, and you have reformed, and you have orthodox, and you have the Hasidim. Does it work that way in Islam for Muslims? Are there, because I almost look at it like it's almost like a rainbow. And so you've got the people who don't practice, and then it kind of goes up and goes up, and then it goes off, you know, into wild outer space with ISIS.
Sure.
Does it work that way? Because the rare times I watch the news, I really don't like to watch what's on TV, but I do a lot of reading. And even then, reporters will slant it one way or the other. I can type in one word. I can type in hijab. And I will get 50% articles of totally against it and that women are oppressed by wearing that or the burqa and so forth. And then I'll read the other 50% and say, you know, the women are saying, well, it's all about my devotion to God. I'm not oppressed. I'm not forced to wear it. So the truth is always somewhere in the middle. And I think when people listen to the news or listen to the radio or even read these articles, they put all of one religious group into one category, which right now is ISIS, because that's, they see the extremist portion of it. But when you, and that's one of the reasons also, I think, that you see so much violence, because people who are not Muslim see what's going on, and they put everybody into that one category,
right.
And that's why you see the violence. But what people don't understand is why do you not really hear a lot from leaders in your community, you know, there are some articles, sometimes it makes it on the news, but it almost seems not that so much they should defend themselves, but they should stand up and say, hey, this is not representative of who the rest of us are. It's like you have that one bad apple that's destroying that whole bunch.
Well, the problem is that the Muslim community, we get the blame for anything bad done by any member who calls himself a member of our community. Anybody who does something wrong, calls himself a member of our community, we all get the blame for it. But when the 8 million Muslims in America do great and wonderful and positive and constructive things today, every single day, we don't get the credit for it. So there are double standards in the blame versus the credit. That being said, the American Muslim community, statistically, according to Gallup, actually is much more likely than other religious communities to condemn violence done in its name. And people, don't take my word for it. Just Google Muslims condemning violence, and you will find so many hits about Muslims condemning violence, but it doesn't get the attention. I'll end very quickly with an example. Yesterday, we had a media breakfast where we invited members of the media to come and hear about the Muslim community, and a significant portion came about debunking ISIS, condemning them, condemning terrorism. Only one reporter showed up. But if somebody goes in the middle of the street and yells that he loves ISIS, he'll make the front page news. So every time we have things condemning violence, it doesn't make the media, it doesn't make the news. But when some crazy lunatic does something stupid, it's front page news.
This is why I don't watch the news, because it's all crazy. And that's what it comes down to. All right, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Do you suffer from back, neck, or body pain? Do you suffer from migraines or have jaw or face pain? Has conventional medicine failed you? Were you injured or in an accident? Call chiropractic physician Dr. Dan Maddock at 813-935-1664. Dr. Dan has helped thousands of patients gain relief for more than 30 years. Dr. Dan is caring, gentle, and takes his time with each patient. He's also a past president of the International Craniopathic Society, a special certification of only 300 chiropractors worldwide. Dr. Dan helps patients from the neck up and the neck down. Dr. Dan accepts most insurance plans. Don't continue to live in pain. Call 813-935-1664. Today. That's 813-935-1664, and get on track to better health.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry, providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more. Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
And welcome back to the show. We've been talking about Hot Topic. Today's show is called Informed Discussions, Muslims and Islam, First in a Series. And so we were talking a little bit about earlier about Muhammad having slaves in the Bible. And so when I read a lot of this information, you know, it almost seems like the Quran promoted slave rape as acceptable. Men could have multiple wives, you know, and sexual slavery still exists. I want to get opinions. Actually, let me start with you, Hassan. What are we supposed to think?
So let's talk about that, because when people talk about slavery, right away, the only thing we can connect it to is our own history of slavery in America, which frankly, in many people's eyes, was done in the name of God, in the name of Christianity. And just yesterday, you know, I read that the courts required a school or a community in North America to desegregate. We're still struggling with issues of racism and segregation in America and the after effect of slavery, which was a horrible crime against humanity. But that's not when the Quran talks about slavery. That's not what it's being referred to. First of all, you have to understand, in Prophet Muhammad's time, he came where there was a lot of things that were happening in society, which not only did he reject, but which we reject today. One of which is slavery. The slavery that was referred to in the Quran was about prisoners of war. And basically what happened back then is you have Prophet Muhammad, he's practicing the faith, and they're being attacked. They're fighting defensive wars. They capture prisoners of war. What do you do with the prisoners of war? There's multiple options. Option one is that you execute them. That was the normal cultural practice globally at the time, right? Option two is that you let them go.
But you let them go, they'll just come back and keep fighting you, especially when they're fighting oppressive, aggressive wars where you're outgunned, outnumbered. You know, and if they know they're just going to let you go, you're going to let them go, you know, they have no incentive to stop fighting you. So that's not a practical solution. So number three was the Islamic number three is imprisoning them. But in imprisoning them, they're a drain on society and they're a drain on themselves. And we saw the horrible conditions we've had in our own prisons, like Abu Ghraib and what happened in Iraq. So the Islamic principles of slavery that was permitted was the idea of having bondsmen, that when you enemies attack you, you're allowed to, when you capture them in the battlefield, instead of executing them or imprisoning them, take them in and let them be a part of your family. And the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, taught that whoever, for example, had a slave who taught 10 people how to read, he would be freed. All right. He also said that the person who has these bondsmen who are in your care and custodianship, you have to treat them just as your own family members, to the extent where they have to eat the same food that you eat, they have to have the same clothes that you have. And again, it was just a new way of how do you treat prisoners of war. Instead of killing them, instead of putting them in jail, let them be a part of your family. Yes, they have to serve the family, but at the same time, they have rights and treatment that's much, much better than how modern prisoners of war are treated. Next is practically any sin or mistake you do, the expediation for that sin is you have to free a slave. So Islam wanted to actually get rid of slavery, right? And therefore, if you curse your wife, how do you atone to God for cursing your wife, seeking her forgiveness and freeing a slave? If you miss a fast, how do you atone for free a slave? So it couldn't overnight get rid of slavery in a society. So what it had to do is over time put a system where slavery slowly becomes rejected and outlawed. But again, slavery is not the kind of slavery we have. It's just a different way of having prisoners of war within that context back then. And Islam sought to get rid of it. So over the years, any sin, any mistake people did, they had to free a slave. So that's what the context of slavery referred to in the Quran. And frankly, that's something that was found in the Old Testament and New Testament as well.
The one thing that was in the Old Testament was that God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph, said every 49 years is the year of Jubilee where all slaves know if they had owed you in those 49 years are set free and abolished in one day. And yet, unfortunately, that was never obeyed. But that's what God wanted. However, the execution, which we're agreeing is there have been plenty of failed Christians in history, as I'm sure there have been as many failed Muslims in history as far as following the holy books and the will of God. So, you know, it seems that they've failed miserably in this sex slavery arena because that's never gone away as a woman. She is a property of a male ward, whether that be her husband, her brother, or whatever. And she is expected to obey him.
Actually,
and do everything he says. Otherwise, he and a male relative can kill her and her life is worth nothing.
That's completely false. So
in Pakistan,
Islamic
that's
history,
exactly correct.
Well, so here's the deal. For example, in Africa, you have predominantly Christian countries that practice female genital mutilation, which Prophet Muhammad explicitly forbade. He explicitly forbade. So the problems you have in parts of Africa, in parts of the Middle East, they're across religions. You're right. There's problems with women's rights in Pakistan, in Saudi Arabia, in Turkey, in parts of Africa. That applies, unfortunately, in the Christian community, in the secular community, in the Muslim community. They're not connected to the religion. Religion came to solve these problems that were found in these cultures. So, for example, Islam gave women rights 1,400 years ago that they didn't have in America or Europe till about 50 to 100 years ago. In Europe, in Christian Europe, in Britain, they were still debating up to 200 years ago whether a woman had a soul. In Christianity, the original sin, the burden of that is placed on the woman. Islam rejects that. Islam, 1,400 years ago, the Prophet Muhammad gave a woman full right to come in or out of a marriage, to choose who her husband is, to own property, to be a business owner. Back, yes, before Prophet Muhammad, women were treated in Arab culture as objects. They were inherited. They could not choose who they marry or who they divorce. They could not own property. Prophet Muhammad gave women full financial economic independence 1,400 years ago. Now, do people always practice that? No, unfortunately, they don't. But that's a global problem where, unfortunately, men have often mistreated women.
Pure Christianity has always promoted women. As a matter of fact, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph did the most miracles on behalf of women.
And he often championed them because they were so oppressed by their male relatives on both sides, on the Christian side. And it was just a common that women were property and chattel. But God defended them, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph. Yet I don't see how the God of the Quran has defended women other than, like, for instance, even in the concept of heaven, how do I pronounce this word? And is this word a plural? Huris, H-O-U-R-I-S. How do I pronounce that?
Hura.
Hura. Okay, Hura. So there are how many Huras in heaven? How many? Is there a significance to that number? There's 70-something. I don't know if it's 72 or 76.
Yeah, there's nothing about that in the Quran. But look, get to the fact the Quran says explicitly, for believing men and believing women, for righteous men and righteous women, for men and women who fast, for men and women who give charity, God has prepared for them a tremendous reward. So that in the Islamic tradition, both men and women are equal before God. Now look, you have parts of the Bible. If I want to sit and just cherry pick verses of the Bible, I can find you tons of verses in the Bible that say women shouldn't speak, that say a woman shouldn't show her hair, and if her hair is shown, it should be shaved off. I can give you 50 anti-woman verses, but I don't believe that's the right thing to do, because I believe that's taking things out of context. I believe it's having double standards, and I don't think we should twist things to promote a anti-woman agenda.
Okay, so that leads me back to why I think people are confused when they hear what's in the media. So let me ask you a question. Is what's happening, if you're a Muslim in a European nation or in the Middle East, are the thoughts behind practicing that religion different than here in America? Do you know what I'm trying to ask?
Well, the point I want to emphasize is that the Middle Eastern governments do not represent Islam. There's a lot of confusion. We look at like Yemen or Syria or Saudi Arabia and we say, oh, they're Muslim countries and they do ABC human rights violations. That's because of Islam. No, they're secular dictatorships. Even the Saudi Arabian government, secular dictatorships who care about nothing but their own power. They oppress women, but they've also oppressed men. They oppress Muslims. My father was thrown in jail in Syria for going to the mosque too often. So yes, the Middle Eastern governments don't represent Islam. The best way to understand Islam isn't necessarily to argue a verse here or there, but befriend your Muslim neighbor and get to know them, get to know what they stand for, how they practice. And we don't want to give legitimacy to the interpretation of extremists.
Okay, let me ask you this. What were the events that led up to the division? I mean, what year was Muhammad born?
I don't know the exact year.
Okay. I don't know.
If you're going on the Islamic calendar. Or, but to talk
okay,
about the
but generally, okay, how did that come about?
Sure,
okay, so
question.
Muhammad dies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So basically, you have two main groups in Islamic beliefs. In Christianity, you have tons of groups. But in the Muslim tradition, there tends to be two main groups, the Sunnis and the Shias. The Sunnis believe in that anybody can be the leader of the Muslim community. The Shias believe it should be a member of the Prophet Muhammad's family. Okay. Now, there had been some political fighting, again, over wealth, over land. And unfortunately, members of the Prophet Muhammad's family were betrayed by some of the new converts into Islam. They just recently became Muslim. And they actually fought and killed some of the surviving members of the Prophet Muhammad's family so that they could control take leadership. So the Shia then pledged their lives to support the members of the Prophet Muhammad's family. Now, unfortunately, you had some outside political groups. They went and they attacked both camps to get them fighting with each other. But look, today my grandma is Shia. I'm Sunni. And we've grown up in this, you know, diverse family. And we love and we respect each other. Unfortunately, when we invaded Iraq, what we did is we actually sent people to attack both sides, get them fighting with each other, created destability within the region. The Guardian and other national media outlets have highlighted this.
Oh, but there was they were already at war with what? Right. How many years? 20-some-odd years with the Ayatollah? I mean, that region has
suffered so
much.
Again, it was about wealth
much.
And land, just as the Irish, you know, fought the Protestants. The Catholics fought the Protestants. So, unfortunately, people have corrupted religion to suit their political ends. Religion is not peaceful or violent. People are peaceful or violent. And peaceful people will express their religion peacefully. Violent people, whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, atheist, will express their beliefs violently.
Well, if you try and emulate after someone's life, for instance, if you tried to emulate your life after Jesus Christ, and I think this is where the rubber meets the road, the people that really do commit their life to patterning after Jesus Christ or commit their life to patterning after Muhammad and looking at the actions that Muhammad did, then you could see why, say, for example, a guy like Abu Bakr Shekau, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, I'm pretty sure I fuckwad that one up, but let's say that guy, when he takes 200 schoolgirls and he can look at the Quran and he could say, well, you know,
who abstain from sex except with those joined to them in marriage and bond, or with whom the right hand passes. The right hand passes are his chattel that he's picked up in the wars that you talked about, the captives from the prisoners of war. So, you know, and I have several verses here that somebody like Abu Bakr Shaikh can say, how can you fault me when I can point to the Quran and I can say, well, all married women are forbidden unto you, save those captives whom your right hand possesses. Even sex with married slaves is permissible.
Again, you're taking a random translation of part of a verse to make an argument. And the reality is this. I could point to the Westboro Baptist Church. I could point to the shooter of the Planned Parenthood institution. I can point to countless people who have killed in the name of Christianity, even in the name of Jesus Christ, and they've made their arguments and they've rationalized it.
But these are verses out of your holy book.
And they use verses out of the Bible, too. So what we're doing is we're looking, oh my God, I could give you tons right after the break. I'll read you verse after verse about oppressing women, about burning things. But that's not representative of Christianity. See, unlike you, I don't take the worst adherents of Christianity and legitimize their interpretation as reflective of Christianity. I recognize there are extremists who twist things out of context to suit their political ends.
But these are black and white words. Like you said, these are neutral words out of the Quran that have not just theologically could incite somebody to have slaves, but actually have. The person can say, well, you know, according to this, I can't see how is there any other interpretation that I could have.
And isn't that what the American slave owners used? Did they use the Quran? Or did they slave owners use the Quran or the Bible to justify the enslavement and the rape of thousands, if not millions, of Africans?
Well, in 1857 in Wisconsin, a Christian man refused to turn over some slaves. So it went on both sides.
Exactly.
There were Christians on both sides.
Today, the mainstream leaders of Muslim community globally have put together a book rejecting ISIS, rejecting Baghdadi. You can Google it. It's called Refutation of ISIS by Sheikh Yaqubi. There's another called A Letter to Baghdadi, signed by dozens and dozens of the leading Muslim scholars. So, this is a beautiful example. You've had Christians who've used their religion to do slavery. You've had Christians who've used their religion to fight slavery. You have some bad Muslims who've used their religion to do horrible things. And you have the overwhelming majority who've used their religion actually to counter this. We don't have time to go into all the details. I would urge everybody to look up this film called American Muslims Fact versus Fiction. You can Google it, American Muslims Fact versus Fiction. The data shows that Muslims are actually more likely than other religious groups to condemn violence in the name of their religion.
Well, then how do you explain the fact that Muslims are only 1% of the population of this country, but 50% of them have committed violence, including death, in the name of Allah?
You just said that 50% of American
Muslims. The 1% of the Muslims here in this country.
Wait. Rephrase that.
Okay. 1% of this country has 1% Muslims in it. I don't know. That's good information. Of that, 50% of the deaths have been committed by people who are devout to Islam.
Wait, are you saying 50% of Muslims have committed violence?
No, I'm saying of the deaths that have been violent in deaths, they have been committed by this 1%. A small minority has done lot of damage in the name of Islam.
Yeah, actually, statistically, if you speak to the heads of the Department of Homeland Security and other leaders in terrorism and violence, they actually say the Muslim community is less likely to express violence than other communities.
But
and
that's
the facts,
not
let
what
me
the
finish.
Statistics show.
No, look up the Triangle Center on Terrorism Studies. Over the last decade, we've had over 220,000 Americans killed violently. Okay, you've had about 136 Americans killed in mass shootings in the year 2014. Last year, you had about 372 mass shootings in America, only two of which involved Muslims. Now, that's two too many. It should have been zero. According to the FBI's data.
Yeah, but I'd like to see if they included Tennessee, because
I got to stop you guys.
Chattanooga.
The data's on our side.
No. You can manipulate data because Chattanooga was not thrown in as a terrorist act. So it's interesting for me to see what you categorize as a terrorist act.
I'm going to let him come back. We got to go to a commercial break, so I'll be back in just a moment.
Are you looking for an affordable way to advertise to thousands of consumers nationally? If you own a business and didn't think you could afford radio advertising, you need to call me, Lori Zook, host of the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. My show reaches thousands of people on 29 AM and FM stations nationwide, as well as through the internet. Additionally, your commercials will also be heard on all of my podcasts and throughout social media sites. Don't wait another minute. Call me at 813-777-4908. 813-777-4908. And let me bring your message to the nation and to help you gain more exposure.
And welcome back to the show. We're going to continue on. Got a little heated in the last segment. So, Hagar, why don't you ask your question?
Thank you.
And then...
I have so many questions. What is, how do you pronounce this word? A taquilla, T-A-Q-I-Y-Y-A. How do you pronounce that?
It's actually a conspiracy promoted against the Jews in Germany 70 years before the Holocaust. What was promoted against the Jews? So what the Nazis promoted was this idea that you cannot trust Jews because Jews are liars. And they seek to take over the world because that's what their book tells them. In fact, one of the Nazi propaganda artists said, just like you can't tell the poisonous mushroom from the good mushroom, you can't tell the good Jew from the bad Jew. This is horrible propaganda. Unfortunately, now the same thing's being promoted against Muslims today. I was sitting with one of the leading rabbis in Florida, and he said what's being said about Muslims today is the same as what was said about Jews before the Holocaust in Germany 70 years ago, that Muslims are liars and they seek to take over the world. So this principle of taqiyya is a principle fabricated by the Islamophobia industry to teach that you can't trust Muslims because Muslims are taught to lie, when that is absolutely not correct.
Isn't an Arabic word.
Is it an Arabic word? Yes or no?
Yes, it
okay.
is.
Okay, so how did the Germans pick up an Arabic word with this
word.
Connotation? Excuse me.
They used
I
the
don't
concept.
Have, according to my research, that's a taquilla.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've got a question,
a
but I
wish it was a tequila, but it's a taquilla.
Okay, so I want to go to a less heated, maybe a little bit less heated topic, and I don't remember the words, but I read that when a man wants to divorce his wife, he can repeat something three times and they're divorced. Is that still in effect today? Or has that...
So basically in marriage, when a man marries a woman, he has to offer her a dowry. And these dowries can often be very significant. Money
is supposed to be in
directly
gold,
to her. Well,
originally.
It can be gold or silver, but it could be anywhere from a few thousand to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if a man wants to divorce his wife, he simply says that she is divorced. And therefore, you know, he owes alimony. He cannot take that dowry back, and all these rights and child support. So all these obligations are imposed on him as a result of him doing that. If a woman wants to divorce, she simply needs to go to a judge, which will determine whether she has to return that or not. If she is seeking the divorce, like she just married the guy, and the next day she took the dowry and wants to divorce him, then she has to return the dowry. But if she's divorcing him because he's abusive or not fulfilling her rights or whatever, then the judge will make sure that she gets to keep her dowry and all these other things. So that's the concept of divorce in the Islamic tradition.
Okay, so let me ask you then on Sharia law, because in the United States, you've probably read the same articles I have. I think it was in Irving, Texas, there was a Sharia law that was trying to operate. And there have been other areas or other cities where in the United States and abroad where Sharia law is operating, but it's not under that country's law. Like it's. Do you know what I'm trying to
say?
Well,
here's the deal.
So
they set up separate courts because, I guess, well, you tell us. Talk to us, please.
Well, first of all, there's no separate Sharia courts in America. Let's be clear about that. Secondly, I mean, those were debunked conspiracy theories promoted on Fox News, which they later apologized for, but that's fine. Secondly, what is Sharia? Sharia means the path to the spring, the path to water, the path to success. It's equivalent in the Jewish tradition. It's called halakha, which being a member of the Jewish community, can you tell us a little bit more about halakha?
No, actually, I don't know enough to tell you.
No, I appreciate that. So just if you speak with a rabbi, they'll speak about halakha, which means the path to the spring, the path to water, the path to success. Both halakha in the Jewish tradition, Sharia in the Muslim tradition, is how human beings interpret God's messages in terms of how we should live our life to seek his pleasure. It's not a law book. It's not a code. There is no the official Sharia. It's just how we interpret we need to live our life to please God. Now, under Sharia, what is universally agreed upon, and there's differences of opinion, but here's something that all Muslims agree upon that are devout, true Muslims, not crazy extremists, but the maqasid of Sharia, the goals of Sharia, the goals of the Islamic principles, which is preservation of religion, life, property, honor, and intellect. Again, preservation of religion, life, property, honor, and intellect. So those are the principles that our U.S. Constitution seeks to protect. In addition, Sharia forbids enforcing it on others. It also forbids enforcing it especially on people who don't practice Islam. Right. So for me, Sharia is praying five times a day. It's honoring my mother, respecting my parents, giving charity. That's what Sharia is.
It's the ideology.
It's the it's the belief of how we should live our life to seek God's pleasure.
All right. So is it the more of the extremists that take Sharia and knock it out of context? And when you see, you know, when you see those articles in the paper of a gay man being pushed over a building.
Well, unfortunately, they sort of stole that from the Bible, Leviticus, which says if you see a man with a man, then you should execute them, you should kill them. So what you have is within, you know, the Old Testament and even referenced within the New Testament, verses about the penal code and violence. And historically, some people, even in America, you have, unfortunately, people who are killed because they're homosexual. We read about these kind of hate crimes and by people who consider themselves devout Christian. So, yeah, you have Muslims who have done the same things, unfortunately, but we stand against violence. We stand for human rights and for civil rights and justice.
Okay. Hagar, any comments to that?
Well, it's just, unfortunately, wherever you see, like you said, 100% Muslim, it never translates to that. There's always a failure in translation. But I have another question. All right. I've looked up Quran, and it's spelled K-O-R-A-N and Q-U-A, or maybe I'm even spelling that incorrectly. Why is there a difference between these two documents? Is one more Sunni than is one more Shia? Like, if you say you have a Quran that's spelled with a K, is that more of a Shia document or
look,
a Sunni
the Quran
document?
Is an Arabic word, so when people have Americanized it, they spelled it multiple ways. The essential thing
okay.
to
How
understand,
is it properly spelled?
The understand Al Quran Alif Qaf.
How is it spelled?
Waw, ra, alif, noon. That's how it's spelled. I just
okay.
spelled it in Arabic.
Well,
but the point
can you
is,
write it in English properly?
Well, I mean, it's subject to interpretation, but Q-U-R-A-N is how I often refer
okay,
to it.
Okay, Q-U-R-A-N.
So, but that being said, the translation is just a translation. So people can translate books in many different ways, and they have, and they've applied them in many different ways. So when I want to study the Quran, I go to the Arabic translation. I go to the exegesis, which talks about its context. The Quran is a beautiful book, which when taken in its whole, teaches humanity to be humble before God and to show mercy to the creation of God. That's the essence and the soul and the spirit of the Quran.
Okay, so there are different versions of the Quran, there could be slightly different.
No, so there's only one version of the Quran.
Okay, okay.
There's many translations, because any Tom, Dick, and Harry can write a translation, but we don't honor or respect those translations as the Quran because they're John's translation.
So they have to be written in Arabic in order to be a true rendition? Is
that
correct?
Well, it's obviously whenever you translate a document, it is no longer that original document.
Correct. So, so it would have to be in its purest form in Arabic.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Well, the same thing with the Old Testament in Hebrew.
That's right.
Because I know someone
and the New
that,
Testament in Greek.
Right. When they translate it loses something.
Well,
in
correct.
The English. It's just like there's no word fun in other countries.
Sure.
Fun is something uniquely American.
Right, right.
So you can lose something.
How horrible.
Right. But you see, in all of this discussion, which is why I like doing an informed discussion series,
is
we're getting out all of the thoughts, because I'm sure you're used to being attacked upon by people going, well, what about this and what about
yes.
that? And the what about this and what about that? What it seems to be answering to me is it's the those extremists that are at the far end, and because that's all you hear about.
That's correct. That's all you hear about.
That is affecting anyone else who's Muslim, especially in the United States. So
correct.
When they're walking down the street, people go, "Well, I just saw this person on the news do this and ISIS, and so you must be the same person or the same heart." And that's where I'm starting to get some of the answers is you're saying it's not – it's the extremists that are those bad apples that are causing it, and the interpretations that they have are what people who are not Muslim are seeing.
Correct.
And so, you know, and I understand why people are scared, because I don't know if you were around in New York when September 11th happened.
I was
okay?
in Buffalo, yeah. Buffalo,
okay.
New York.
And my family lives in Manhattan.
You poor thing.
Worst. Yeah, it's cold up there. worst day.
Worst.
I mean, that was one of the worst days for
Absolutely.
Me.
We lost friends that day.
Yeah. And same here. And I was worried I couldn't get a hold of my family. So when you hear those stories and, you know, you look at our government and you look at the news, no one's true. It seems to me no one's truthful
anymore.
Well,
they have maybe an angle that they want to
promote. Oh, there's
promote.
Always an angle.
Yeah. American Muslims are double victims. American Muslims are double victims of 9/11. We were victims when our country was attacked, And we lost, I mean, there were Muslim firemen, there were Muslim first responders who right. were killed, there were obviously employees in the buildings that were killed who were Muslim, and just our fellow Americans were killed. We lost friends, we lost family members. So we were victims directly, and then we were victims when we faced the backlash, when people blamed us for things we had nothing to do with things which we were horrified. I mean, I remember 9/11, I ran home to my prayer rug, and I just cried over the loss of life. I cried for the victims. I prayed that they would find more survivors. I was traumatized. You know, I was a young kid in sixth grade at the time. You know, unfortunately, we documented last year a 500% increase in anti-Muslim hate crimes in the state of Florida. 500% increase. Fear of Muslims, it makes our country less safe as people express their ignorance with fear and hate and violence. It makes us less free because people start talking about making religions illegal, which is contrary to the U.S. Constitution. So my message, and the message I hope listeners take from me today, is very simple. It is that the reality is every single group of people have people who have done horrible things in its name. And every single group of people have probably also had people do wonderful things in its name. So let's not judge a religion by its worst adherents or versus out of context. And the only way you can, first of all, fear and hate somebody is if you're ignorant. Ignorance leads to misunderstanding. Misunderstanding leads to fear. Fear leads to hate. And that ultimately leads to discrimination and violence. So the only way we can sort of fear or hate somebody because of their religion is if we take things out of context or we have double standards.
Okay, you just put a lot into perspective for me because I don't believe that there should be any fighting between any religions
Amen.
Whatsoever.
Amen.
And well, and the other thing that I want to say, too, is to me, people are either inherently good or they're inherently evil. And those who are indifferent to me fall into the evil side mm-hmm. because they're not doing anything for good. And so that's what I see. And I have a hard time understanding the religious wars in the name of religion. Every religion wants to be the top religion. And it almost seems like it's a competition between religions. And I want
to
make
it's a race to the bottom.
That's pretty much what it is. The other thing I want to say, and this will kind of come a little bit, it's a little bit of a bizarre statement here, but years ago there were studies, if you put a group of men into a room and gave them a task, and you put a group of women into a room and gave them the same task, do you guys know who would complete the task first?
The woman, I would imagine.
Yeah, any idea why?
Well, I have my own theory, but okay.
Because women are multitaskers, and they're used to completing a chore, doing multiple things. The reason the men couldn't complete the task quite as quickly was because they were fighting over
who's
going to be in charge, who's the leader,
and which way they're going to do it.
Why we have war. Yeah. All right, so I think you guys, I'd like to have you both back. We're gonna do an ongoing series on that.
Let's get to know each other as human beings. I invite people to reach out to us. They can contact me or my office through our website, careflorida.org, careflorida.org, or visit whyislam.org to learn more about Islam. And finally, please look up the film American Muslims Fact versus Fiction. It's a short YouTube video. Learn more about the community. Let's stand united to build a more tolerant and just society together for all humanity. God bless you.
Okay, I have a question about the nature of God, because to me, that, and please let me get through. I'm going to read a few scriptures, okay, from the Bible, and then I'll let you know when I'm done, and then you can go for it or whatever. But to me, you know, the argument comes down to who is God, and, you know, I happen to be a Bible believer, so let me just read you a few scriptures from here, and I'll let you know when I'm done. But you've got Exodus 3:6, where God says to Moses, moreover, he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Okay, next I'm going to read some from Isaiah here. Isaiah 44:6, thus says the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, I am the first and the last. Besides me, there is no God. Isaiah 45:5. I am the Lord, and there is no other. There is no God besides me. Isaiah 45:18. He says, I am the Lord, and there is no other. And this is repeated several times throughout Isaiah. And then I just want to add one thing from Deuteronomy as regards to, you know, what humans are supposed to do and what they're not. Deuteronomy, and let me get the proper verse. It's Deuteronomy 12. And 32, God says, what thing soever I command you, observe to do it, thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from it. So, you know, God has laid down his commands in the Torah, And he says, don't add anything to it and don't take anything away from it. So my question to you is, who is Allah? Oh, and in a back in, now, one more thing I want to do. In Isaiah, there's another verse where God, maybe I read that, or where God says that he is the creator. Maybe, thus says the Lord who created, 45:18, thus says the Lord who created the heavens, who is God, who formed the earth and made it, who has established it, who did not create it in vain, who formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord and there is no other. All right, so you worship Allah, is from what I understand, according to the Quran. So how is there any conflict between what the Quran and what God is saying here in the scriptures?
Beautiful, beautiful verses that really shook me because they're so beautiful, so powerful. And these are verses that as a Muslim we certainly believe in. They're a beautiful and a very strong description of God, much like how God is described in the Quran. Now, obviously, the Quran is in Arabic, so it's not going to use English. It's not going to use the word God. It's going to use the word Allah, the God, in Arabic, which is what Christians have called God since before the time of Prophet Muhammad, Allah, right? The God. So Allah is the Arabic word for God. It is what Muslims and Christians have referred to God for hundreds and hundreds
of
years.
Disagree.
In fact, you should speak to my very, good friend, Michael Hanna. He's a Coptic Egyptian Christian. He calls God Allah. He says, Insha'Allah. And so does every single Arab Christian in the world call God Allah from before the time of the Prophet Muhammad. So you can disagree, but it's not based. In fact, my Christian neighbors, my neighbors in Syria were Christian. They used to take me with them to church when they would celebrate Christmas, and they called God Allah. They even called Jesus the Son of Allah, which you may find offensive, but that's actually what they called. Now, here's the difference. The Bible says very clearly that God is not any shape, any human, any picture. So as Muslims, we believe God has no son. We believe in Jesus. We believe in the virgin birth of Jesus Christ. But we believe God sent Muhammad to bring people back to the original message of Jesus, to worship God the Creator and not worship any human being.
Well, then why in the five tenets? What are the five tenets of Islam?
Recognizing that there is only one God.
That's one.
So the five pillars of Islam, recognizing that there is only one God,
one.
And honoring Adam, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad.
That's two.
That's the first one. The second one is praying to God five times a day.
Okay.
The third is giving charity to feed the poor and the needy.
Okay.
The fourth is fasting from sunrise to sunset in Ramadan. Okay. The fifth is doing pilgrimage to follow the footsteps of Abraham in Mecca.
Okay. All right. That's funny because when you ask about other people, they give you five different things.
Okay, great. And Hagar, I want to thank you very much for joining me.
Here, yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk about more topics. I actually did come up with an outline for the show. We only covered a couple of paragraphs because, I know you got hit with a lot of questions.
Yeah,
so thank you.
Sides.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. And we're going to do this again in the future.